From the Brooklyn Paper Building in beautiful downtown Brooklyn, this is Brooklyn Paper Radio. I'm your host, Vince DiMaselli.
No, that's co-host, Vince. That's co-host, because that's right. Gersh Kuntzman, a legend of the game, is back. Vince, what do you think?
Well, it's nice to have you here, Gersh, as a guest on the show, here with my co-host, Tony Ritono.
Whoa.
Did I pronounce
host.
That right?
Co-host, yeah, you did.
Okay, co-host, very good. And, of course, Jimmy or Johnny or whatever his name is on the board.
Johnny, if you could.
Let's not bury the lead, Vince DiMaselli. Let's not bury the lead.
We are trying to do something today that in the annals of Brooklyn Paper Radio, and in most radio, has never been done. We have three hosts on an afternoon drive show. This is three hosts on an afternoon drive show. Now, we're going to try not to talk over each other.
No, yes, we're not
going
to talk over each other.
Try to make sure that we're all talking at different times. When we get phone calls from people, if they call in, it's going to be very difficult to see who's going to answer the questions,
You know, given the fact that we have a guest on the show who will be phoning in later, you probably should say that this is the first time in the annals of radio history that you've had three co-hosts.
That's a very good segue, Gersh, because the person that will be on the show, why don't you tell us a little bit about her, and we'll talk about some other things, because there's a lot to talk about.
Well, we got Catherine Gates coming on the show. She's the author of Deviant Desires. It's the classic story about America's obsession with deviant sex. We'll talk more about her, but I want you to know, if you're hearing the sound of my voice, and I know you are because you heard the tweet that I would be on the show, hang on. She's going to call in a couple minutes. We're going to have a nice chat about deviant desires. And when I say deviant desires, obviously I'm looking at Vince DiMaselli, a handsome man.
Well, what's the connection to Brooklyn, Gersh? This is Brooklyn Paper Radio. Why is Catherine on the show?
She will be appearing at Powerhouse Books on Monday, February 12th, from 7 to 9 p.m.
Powerhouse Books in Dumbo.
And she is a former resident of Brooklyn Heights.
Really? She used to live in the Heights?
In my research on her, yes.
I did not know that.
Yes,
see,
so
that's
we
why,
can ask her.
That's why it's great to have guys like Tony on the show, because, first of all, they care. And second of all, they're doing the research that I'm not doing.
Message, I care.
You also got the deputy and the chief, which is the new name of the show in my mind.
Whose voice is that?
I don't know. Every week.
The
every
deputy
week.
And the chief.
Nobody said four guys in the room.
Every week that happens. I don't know why. But listen, there's a lot to talk about because Gersh, you know, was a co-host of the show for a very long time. And then he went away because he took a job at Newsweek. Now, a lot of people might have heard Newsweek's in the news, right?
Newsweek is very much in the news. It sort of can't stay out of it at this point.
Point of information, Vince. Yes. I took an important job at Newsweek.
An important job at Newsweek where Gersh was in charge of breaking news. Now,
I had about 20 reporters under me.
20 guys working for him.
And women.
When Gersh came to me, talked to me about this job, he asked me if he should take it and stuff like that. I said, you know, it sounds like a good move. I don't know what Newsweek is. I don't know what its finances are. I don't know how long it's going to be around. I don't know if it's run by, it's like some kind of Ponzi scheme.
Yeah,
run
these
by,
would have been good questions to get the answer of.
I don't know if the entire board of directors is under indictment. I don't know any of that.
At the time, who knew?
All I knew was
the
Paul.
DA knew, actually.
That's
the
true.
DA knew.
That's true.
We should have talked to the DA. Apparently, every job we go for now, we first have to have a chat with the district attorney's office. And that's the way to go. All I knew was Paul Simon mentioned Newsweek in a song, I think, right? Put you on the cover, Newsweek, right?
Me and we're Julia. On our way.
Hey, I don't
we're
know
taking
where
our
I'm
own.
Going.
And at one point, it had merged with the iconic magazine editor Tina Brown's digital enterprise, The Daily Beast. And I knew that as a former alum of Vanity Fair, which was helmed by Tina Brown before.
You're dropping that Vanity Fair in there like Harvard guys drop Harvard in there.
Well, you know, the funny thing about Vanity Fair is that there was a 2001 article that in which our guest today was featured prominently in about sexual fetishes and sexual culture. One in particular, which was really alarming, called stomping or crushing.
That's not sloshing?
I think it's called crushing.
Squishing?
Or squishing or
I don't know.
Stomping.
Splooshing?
I'm pretty sure it's crushing, although maybe we should submit these different terms for new names, where men get pleasure from watching a woman step on live animals.
Hmm. Well, it's coming full circle for you, and I'm using the word coming, obviously.
It came full circle, and it's about to come again.
Nice.
I'm not going to argue with
but
any
Vince,
of
Vince, where were you going with the Newsweek story? Because I was on the edge of my seat.
Here's what happens. Gersh takes the job at Newsweek, And as is often the case, he's in charge of a lot of things. Just like when he went to the Daily News, Gersh was like in charge of local news? Or were you in charge of breaking? What were you in charge of?
I was the deputy managing editor for news, for all news.
Like all news. Gersh comes in and he's like...
It's a big deal.
No, people. It's like they it's have a parade for him and everybody's excited. And then within 2 weeks at the Daily News...
About a month.
It took about a month. Gersh was made assistant like features editor.
Oh, wow.
No. That decline took a little longer. I was made assistant to the deputy managing editor of news. Then I was made assistant local editor. Then I was made assistant features editor.
Well, that's
and
what
eventually
happened.
They made me just writer.
Right. Columnist.
Content provider. Yeah, content provider.
Content provider, Gersh Kunstman. And all Gersh ever wants to do is run something.
Something big, something small.
All he ever wants to do.
And
so
you
now,
have passion for it.
He goes to Newsweek, right? And I call him, hey, how's it going? Oh, not so good. Well, what's going on? Oh, well, they demoted me. What do you mean they demoted you? I'm in charge of politics. I'm doing...
No, I'm the deputy.
Deputy.
I'm the politics desk.
Deputy politics editor. And I'm just like, what is going on with Gersh Kunstman? Why is it every time he gets a new job, he gets demoted?
Point of information. Why do you phrase that as what's going on with Gersh Kunstman? I would say what's going on with the rest of the world.
I would agree. Maybe Gersh Kunstman is a threat. People who, you know, don't want him to become
that's
their manager.
That's not that, Tony. You went the wrong conspiracy theory.
Okay.
The entire media landscape is having the California-like flash flood and raging conflagrations, and yet they don't turn to Gersh Kunstman. They turn away. How do you know Gersh Kunstman isn't the guy with the fire hose putting out that blaze?
You'd be the first person I'd call.
There we go.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing with Gersh Kunstman. You'd think he'd be the first person you call, but... It turns out that apparently that's not the case. And what happens is this is number two. Now, if this happens a third time, maybe the problem aren't these bosses at these big-time media papers, media companies, media conglomerates. Maybe the problem is Gersh Kunstman. Have you thought about that?
Wow. I have thought about that extensively, and I'm glad you raised that issue, Vince. As you know, we're going to be talking to Catherine Gates about deviant sexuality.
Sure.
And I'm open to that topic. As far as my personal professional career, Vince, I still believe... The entire media landscape is wrong. Everybody out there doing the same old thing, chasing the same old clicks, needs a little of that Gersh Kunstman magic. And they're just
deviant.
Not seeking it out.
You are the deviant in their midst.
And look, Carly Simon said it best. Nobody does it better.
That was about you, right?
It makes me feel sad for the rest.
But she also said, you're so vain.
That was a different song about a totally different relationship.
It wasn't you.
It might have been.
Carly versus Carly.
She's never actually admitted who it was.
No, she never admitted who it was. A lot of people have thoughts on who it is.
Yeah.
My thought is that it's Gersh Kunstman.
No question about it. Guys, look, I am just, but more importantly, to close the circle on this part of it, it's obviously my fault. I get it. But I'm so proud and pleased to be here with you because I would rather be on this radio show
talking about Gersh Kunstman
with you people than with the finest radio show hosts in the world.
Yeah, I know. Well, who else is going to give you this forum?
Well, I mean... Nobody.
It's a good question.
Nobody. I'm going to ask the tough questions of our guest, who's going to be calling in a couple
actually,
of minutes.
Actually, we're calling her, for the record.
Oh, Jesus.
All right.
No,
we're going to call her in a couple
of minutes.
But I do have to say one thing.
Uh-huh.
As you know, I'm in the WT. I live in the Windsor Terrace, the WT. I'm trying to bring sexy back to the WT. And the Brooklyn paper did a great service to me this week by informing me, Colin Mixon Joint, of the opening of Ample Hills, couple of blocks from my house.
Yes, on Bartle
and
Pritchett Square.
I just wanted to take a moment to A, thank the Brooklyn paper for doing that kind of granular reporting that informs the community of important developments in the community, and also pull back for a second. I'm getting in Ample Hills!
You're getting ice cream.
Close by. You can walk to it and then walk back home. It's probably, what, like a half mile there and back?
Quarter mile.
Quarter
mile there and a quarter mile
so
back.
So that's a half mile there and back, as I first stated. You could play the tape, Johnny. Play back the tape. All right?
Okay, yeah. You're right.
So you're getting a little exercise while you're going to get your ice cream. I think that's fantastic.
I mean, it's
going to
burn about 8 calories of the 300 calories, but I was very excited. And I think, and I've said this to your bosses, Tony, I've said it to your bosses, Vince, bring me back. That's the kind of work I like to do. Ultimately, local news is my passion, and not just stories about ice cream parlors.
No.
I'm talking about the Pulitzer-worthy coverage you guys are already starting to do on the Neftali Ramirez death case with that garbage truck, the one in Bed-Stuy last week where the guy was bragging on Facebook about how he didn't have a license. I mean, these are the kind of stories nobody else is doing. Why hasn't the Times weighed in on Neftali Ramirez?
It is shocking to me that no one else has picked up that story.
So that's what I'm saying. Bring me back.
Actually, the Post has done a pretty decent job.
Bring me back. Bring me back. Everybody, bring me back. Bring me back. See, I got a chant going. Do you hear that?
That was good. You had you and Tony.
We just need to get a logo.
I noticed Vince did not join in. Every week I'm on this show in years past, and I said, Vince, you're a handsome man. I think you're great. Great guy. Doesn't even join the chant. You hear that?
I can't join in the chant. I have like some kind of power over this in some way, shape, or form.
He needs to be, unbiased.
Exactly. I'm gonna get our guest Catherine Graham, the deviant sex woman, to chant, "Bring him back, bring him back."
So let me ask you a question. You talk so much about what you're trying to do, what you were trying to do at Newsweek, what you were trying to do at the Daily News, not having all this clickbait stuff. Why are we having a deviant sex writer on the show? This seems like clickbait.
No, it's not clickbait.
It's a good question.
There is a difference between clickbait and serving a public need, and the public look. Sex sells, I'll admit that. But the reason sex sells is people enjoy talking about sex. Mm-hmm. They enjoy watching people have sex, and they enjoy having sex themselves.
Why do you think the first popular sex, first popular sex talker, so to speak, was Ruth Westheimer?
Yeah, Dr. Ruth was initially.
But why her?
I'll tell you exactly why. Because she spoke frankly, but not gratuitously about sex.
But wasn't it because she was an old lady? Like,
no.
For some reason, she was an old lady, and she was kind of non-threatening accent.
Well,
that was German.
That sort of describes like why C. Everett Koop, for example, as Surgeon General, put on that white coat with that beard, and suddenly, oh, he's a medical professional.
Yeah. Very official.
Ruth Westheimer, though, took the gross, prurient element out of sex. Sexuality is one of the most basic. It is the most, other than breathing, the most basic human urge, I believe. And I believe Ruth Westheimer said, you know what? I'm a short little old lady, but I still have sex. I still enjoy it. I want it. I think about it. Nothing wrong with that.
No, I don't think that it was like that you ever thought of Dr. Ruth Westheimer as having sex.
I did. In fact, if you see pictures of her.
She often talks and tweets about her sexual.
No, but her.
She's still alive?
Yeah, she is. Her husband. Her husband, if you go back into the records, her husband was a strapping man. I mean, you think Vince DiMicelli's attractive. This guy was like the hunk version of Vince DiMicelli.
You'd be more so hunk.
I'm saying you could have sex with
so
Ruth
he was like
Westheimer.
George Clooney.
No, it's like the kind of the attractive Jewish central middle Europa kind of like chiseled. I'm thinking like Kurt Waldheim, but I'm trying to take out the Nazi part of him. Like
sure.
Really,
you don't want
to
have that.
Really
hand,
attractive. Though. European good looks.
I knew nothing of I knew nothing of Dr. Ruth's husband.
Dr. Ruth definitely enjoyed sex and is not ashamed of it. And that is what that is the bridge, the hill I want to die
and
on.
And that was back in the 80s. And then after that there was who was that other guy? That guy who used to be on with Adam with the guy from The Man Show.
Dr. Phil.
Not Dr.
Oh,
Phil.
Oh, Adam Carolla?
Yeah, Adam Carolla had a show.
No, but that
the other guy. Wasn't he like a sex talker guy?
But that
too?
Was clickbait. You
Carson
see,
Daly.
The difference.
What
Carson
about Daly. What about the local treasure, Robin Bird, whose sex show still appears
it's
on?
It's a local treasure in Manhattan. We don't want to
but that. But
Brooklyn.
Robin
Public
Bird.
Television.
But Robin Bird was ostensibly a porn show. Like she would.
Right.
It was about the salacious quality of sex. But Dr. Ruth and our guest coming up next. Mm-hmm. They study this stuff. They're not just in it to get
not,
a little.
They're not in it for the clickbait.
Right, or the clitbait, if you will. They're in it. No, they're in it just to talk about what is it about, what motivates human. And the good thing about Catherine Gates is she actually has published, we're going to talk about this later, something called a kink map, which explores, and Johnny, put up a picture of the click.
You got the kink map?
Yeah, you got it.
Good. All right. If you're on our website, look at the kink map. It just maps all of the human taboos, what you call taboo. Medical bondage, smoking bondage, necrophilus, crushed pancakes.
Ooh, necrophilus
it's
is that?
All this stuff that people do. And obviously I'm talking about defecation.
Sure, it's got to be on there.
Well, it is.
It's on the map.
Anything you can think of, right? They used to say, whatever man can conceive, he can achieve. Well, the same thing is true about sex. If you've thought about it, or if you've seen... I don't know. You go to Pornhub all the time, Vince. I know. If you go there and there's like menus and it's pull down, and one of them is like fetish. And then you click on that, and then there's like a thousand fetishes.
Sub-menu.
And it's crazy. And like, I never even heard of some of these. I mean, from what Vince tells me, I have never even heard of some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going to talk to Catherine Gates about. Are you going to get her on the phone, Johnny?
Yeah, you want to call
her? Yeah, it's time to call her.
A lot of rubber on the cover of that book, it looked like.
We'll talk about it.
Wait, but very quickly, how did you guys meet? How did we meet Catherine?
No, we were in a bar, Vince and me. Yeah. That's where all great stories start. Sure, Vince and I are in a bar.
Vince and Gersh walk into a bar.
Yeah.
And we run into Daniel Power, who runs Powerhouse Books.
And who would have known that Powerhouse Books is owned by a guy whose last name is Power?
I did not know that.
And you know what he says to us? He says, Vince and Gersh, loving the show. Yeah, you guys are doing a great job.
Great job.
I had to tell him I hadn't been on the show in 4 months.
But he loved it while you were on it.
He did. And he said, you guys should put Catherine Gates on. And I'm like, tell me more. Deviant Desires. And I was like, stop right there. You had me a deviant.
Yeah.
So let's get her on the phone there, Johnny.
All right, you dial 9.
John's trying to get the phone.
Once we get her on.
Things off
actually,
the hook,
should I read the intro while he's doing it?
Yeah, but do the intro.
Okay, I'm going to do the intro. So, Tony, I was telling Vince, sometimes on Brooklyn Paper Radio, we do a long-winded, pre-written introduction to show the gravitas and respect we have for a particular guest.
Hello.
That's her. There she is. Catherine, is that you?
That's me.
All right, you were on Brooklyn Paper Radio, and as you listen, Gersh Kuntzman is about to introduce you. But we're live. We're live now.
We're live.
But he's going to introduce you while you're on the phone. You ready?
Yep.
All right, Gersh, go.
So as I said, Catherine, sometimes on Brooklyn Paper Radio, we do a long-winded, pre-written introduction to show the gravitas and respect we have for a particular guest. And today is no exception. Now, I will ask my attractive co-hosts, Vince DiMaselli and Tony Rotuno, to not cut me off as I do this. Is that okay, Vince?
We'll try not to.
All right, you can say okay. Anyway, okay. Our next guest is Catherine Gates, author of the seminal, or perhaps I should say, given the context, seminal book, Deviant Desires, Incredibly Strange Sex, which came out 20 years ago, but is being reissued with a new Deviant Behavior by Powerhouse Books, our friends in Dumbo. Now, Gates' website calls her, quote, a woman of numerous skills, a few of them useful, but she's being modest, because in addition to her book, Gates has written for The Village Voice and, obviously, The Position. She also curated the exhibition Kink, Geography of the Erotic Imagination, which ran at the Museum of Sex. Well, that's in Manhattan, but still, it's an important institution in 2007. She's also creator of the Kink Map. We spoke of that earlier, which basically tries to map out all our weird, I didn't mean weird, I mean completely legitimate desires. And Johnny's going to put up another copy of the Kink Map on our website right now.
All right.
So we welcome Catherine Gates to Brooklyn Paper Radio. And Catherine, I need to start right in with the tough questions because it's what I do. I love sex, probably more than anybody, but I don't love the idea of someone defecating on me. Now, what is wrong with me?
There's nothing wrong with you. You like what you like, and you don't like what you don't like. You know, the scat thing is certainly one of those untouchables of the kink world. You know, you ask any kinky person, okay, what's one thing you really don't think you want to do,
mm-hmm.
and they'll all mention that one.
Well, and then they do it, and it opens them up to a world of kink?
Well, no. I mean, I think scat isn't for everyone, you know, and the appeal of it is very particular, though it's not often what you assume. It's not necessarily about disgust and humiliation so much as it is about service. I interviewed one guy
service.
Who wants to basically serve as a beautiful woman's toilet. It's the idea of sort of performing the ultimate service to somebody that he admires.
Well, I am coming around on this.
I am coming around. You know, I had the same thing with a New Yorker editor once, but we don't need to go into that. No, I pledged to clean his bathroom if he would just give me a job at the New Yorker. I literally... That's a side issue. Anyway, Catherine, that's very interesting to me as someone who's not into what you call the scat thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta bring you back to another type of what you call deviant desires. All that what's that latex stuff? What's the appeal of that?
Hmm.
Well, I mean, latex has a great appeal because it has, you know, it's a core kink. It's one of these kinks which has the properties of touchy, feely, and smelly. And it's something that we probably came into contact when we were young. It has a very distinct odor. I see it as kind of a cross between vanilla and BO.
Hmm.
But other people see it differently. But, you know, it's...
Sometimes my car smells like that.
Well, so that sounds good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something that somebody might have a very strong attachment to that when they're a child. And then as they get older, they are able to sort of use that sensation and that smell to add excitement to something else. add excitement to sex.
What about stuff that hurts? That's another area. And what's the equivalent of that? You call the pooping the scat thing. What's the hurt stuff? Bondage?
Pleasure through pain.
Okay, so I have never ever had pleasure through pain. Like, I get a cut on my finger, I'm like out for a week. So
paper cut's the worst.
So who loves that? And who loves that, and what do they love about it?
Well, I think some people are just wired as if the pleasure and pain centers of their brain are somehow connected, and there's no real explanation for that. I think that pain, you know, obviously they have that scale when you go to the doctor with the little faces, you know, and the really unhappy face and all that sort of stuff. So there's a scale, and some people want a little bit of pain, you know, maybe just a little bit. That sort of gets the heart beating a little faster. It's a little surprising. You know, it causes muscles to clench, and that can be a good thing at the right moment.
What about I've heard of people trying to, like get choked out while they're having sex or something like that.
Okay, well, that's really not safe. Any kind of breath play is a very, very dangerous place to go.
Wait, is that on the kink map?
Not a good idea.
Is that on the kink map?
Try that at home.
I think that's on the kink map, though, isn't it?
Yes. I do put things on the map that people do.
And what do you call
that? I don't think people should be playing with unless they really know what they're doing.
Yeah, that sounds very dangerous.
Do not try this at home. And if Vince Jr. is listening, do not try this at home.
He's not listening. And I wanted to point out to our listeners out there, we are going to have two different versions of the show this week. There'll be the unedited version, which you can listen and hear everything we have to say. And there will be the edited version, which, of course, Johnny's going to work really hard after the show and beep out everything that needs to be beeped out. So Johnny, get to fucking work.
There you go. Catherine, I have a question for you. So Gersh mentioned your title is being reissued this year, 20 years after it originally came out. Why now? What is the point of the reissue? Is there that much new, you know, deviant? Are there that many new deviant desires now than there were then, or is the time right in popular culture? What's with the reissue?
Well, I think the time is right. I mean, Powerhouse actually called me up the day after Trump was elected, and the inspiration, I think, was this understanding that the conversation around things like consent and desire were getting kind of messed up, you know, that people were getting really kind of confused about what's okay and what's not okay and how to talk about it and how to think about it. And so it just seemed like the pendulum was about to swing in a direction which was against, you know, where my book is coming from and was always coming from, which was, you know, people, grown-ups should be able to play. But when we're grown-ups, we play when we talk about it first, and we talk about it during, and we talk about it after, and we listen to each other, and we figure out what we like and what we don't like. And I think that time for that conversation has never been more important. And as for, is there anything new under the sun? No, not really. I think what has changed in the last 20 years, the first edition really was inspired by the desktop publishing revolution and all these odd little zines for niche kinks that people were putting out. Mm-hmm. And it was just at the beginning of the internet. But sure. I knew that was really going to change stuff.
Wait, you're the one who knew. You figured it out.
Well, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people figured it out. But it was clear that what was happening was people who have these really obscure niche kinks, you know, who grow up their entire lives thinking, you know, am I the only person in the world who gets off on popping balloons? You know, I'm a lonely person. I'll never, ever meet anybody like me. You know, how pathetic am I?
Wait, where are they popping these balloons? Just for our listeners, I'm aware of this, but I want the listeners to know.
It's not anything to do with genitalia necessarily. I mean, that's one of the things about kink, is that it's about pushing your emotional buttons, not necessarily your obvious physical buttons. So balloon people are interested. They're very excited by the inflation of the balloon and the pressure on the skin of the balloon. And is it going to pop? And I'm terrified of the pop, and it's very exciting, and I want it to pop. And so it's a metaphor of excitement and arousal, but it has that latex smell and all of that sort of stuff. You know, so it's a behavior that is arousing.
We were talking before you came on, and you mentioned the Trump thing. We were talking about the idea of why, you know, people talking about sex, it makes them so embarrassed, and we don't often talk about it, even though, you know, people, pioneers like Ruth Westheimer, for example, took the dirty, salacious stuff out of sexuality and made it more about, okay, what do you like? Why do you like it? And that's okay. And I think that's what your book does to a large extent.
Yeah. And I mean, I like to celebrate the people who are doing odd stuff, but they're doing it conscientiously, you know, intelligently and with consent. You know, that these are people who, you know, their ultimate fantasy is to be trussed up like a turkey and pretend cooked in a big cardboard box. And this is what they've always wanted to do, you know. And they're going out and they're finding a way to do that in a safe way. No, they don't want to be Jeffrey Dahmer, or they don't want to be killed by somebody like Jeffrey Dahmer. They just want to play this way.
Well, it's funny. I think I speak for everybody in the room right now when I say it's fun to think of myself dressed up as a turkey and stuffed in a cardboard box. But, Catherine, this is the part I need to understand. Where does the sexual excitement for those people come from? For me, it's just fun. It would be a lot of fun to have Tony or Vince, who's a handsome man, dress me up like a turkey, put me in a cardboard box. But I wouldn't get a sexual charge.
Right. So for the person for whom this is their sort of primary turn-on, you mean the reason why they ended up like this, that's probably a mystery as to why they ended up like this, and it's probably a mystery why you ended up liking the things you like. But, you know, there's the bondage element, and I think there are a lot of people who like the idea of being trussed up in some way or another. You know, bondage gives you a sense of being tightly held, and there's a kind of struggle that's exciting and a sort of sense of peril, which is a little bit exciting.
Yeah.
And there's also the sense, at least for the turkey person, of being the center of attention. You know, maybe you really envied that turkey on Thanksgiving and thought everybody's looking at that turkey and going, ooh, ah, and it sort of looks like a naked thing, and it's sort of terrifying to think of it being cooked.
Everybody wants that fucking turkey.
It's exciting and terrifying.
I always thought the pumpkin pie was the big thing.
Well, you could be dressed up as a pumpkin. I could cover you with whipped cream, Vince.
That's too predictable, though.
Is it?
The whipped cream.
Well, I mean, but that's what Vince wants. See, we're talking about what he wants.
Well, there's a whole other thing for, you know, throwing pies in people's faces. That's a whole other kink.
Well, that's like a whole European political tradition. You're telling me these guys are getting sexual charge out of that?
Absolutely.
Wow. All right, but now I got to ask the tough question. And it took us 15 minutes. We warmed up to each other. We've had a little foreplay, Catherine. But what are you into? Are you into some of these quote-unquote deviant desires, or are you like vanilla?
I like to read about it, and I like to look pictures of it, and I like to think about it. But I'm kind of a coward when it comes to acting stuff out. Honestly, I think I'm afraid that I would lose control and not know when to stop. So I'll just keep it at that arm's length of watching and reading about it.
What got you interested in it? What made you write the book in the first place?
Well, I was had a small publishing company, and I went all over the East Coast and the West Coast to these small bookstores, and all of them had these racks of magazines in them, and a lot of them were these little niche kink publications where some, usually a guy, who thought, well, you know, I can't possibly be the only guy who imagines women dressed up like ponies and I want to think about riding on their backs. I can't possibly be the only person into this. So I'm going to make a magazine devoted to this.
Mm-hmm.
And if I make it, maybe I'll find other people who like this thing. And so I would find all of these magazines like Equus Eroticus or Splash Magazine, which is a magazine devoted to playing around in baked beans and pies and things like that.
Oh, baked beans, of course.
And so I just started collecting them, obsessively collecting niche erotica, because I was sort of curious, like you are, what the heck is going on here? I mean, why would somebody like this? What's exciting about it? What's, you know, interesting about it? And also, it seems so harmless and fun and playful, which is not at all the way I've been brought up to think of nonconformist sexuality. You know, I always thought of, the minute you're off that straight and narrow path, you know, it's that slippery slope down into pedophilia or whatever, and it's scary and weird and frightening, and everybody's going to be murdered, and, you know. But these people were doing something that seemed so, well, silly and fun and childish and playful. And I thought, wow, that's totally different. I want to know more.
So you started interviewing people about this stuff and talking to them. Was that the next step?
Yes. I mean, I immediately started contacting all the people who published these niche zines to interview them and watch them play and find out what they were doing. And
the
why.
Publishers were into this stuff when you were interviewing. It wasn't like you where you're just keeping it at arm's length. These people were totally like into it, correct?
Right. This was their thing. This is not people who've decided, I'm going to make $1 million making pornography for pony play people. These were
that's a tough nut to crack.
Passion.
Vince is making a good point, though. And I think that pornography, as much as we all enjoy it, is ruining the world that you were in 20 years ago, because basically you do have people who are saying, I can make some money doing very niche fetish videos, like pony play video, right? Aren't people doing that? Making careers of this?
Yeah, but I think that unless you really have this kink yourself, you're not going to make a video that really gets to the point of what these people are interested in. I mean, the thing that most vanilla people and mainstream pornographers don't understand is that, you know, one of the elements that makes these kinks seem so kinky to those of us who watch this stuff is it's not really about, you know, penises and vaginas and sex. Mm. You know, they're not interested in, you know, the old in and out. They're not interested in bouncing breasts and all the sort of obvious stuff that you see in pornography.
Well, you call
they're
it obvious.
They're interested in the saddles and the bits and the tails and the, you know, sugar cubes and the carrot treats and all that sort of stuff.
I love how you refer to this as the old penis and vagina. It's like, well, to me, that's still the new thing. I mean, every time I have sex, I'm like, wow, this is exactly what I wanted right now.
The old appendages.
For some people, these kind of kinky things are, say, the appetizer, and actual traditional sex is the entree and dessert. And for some people, these kind of activities are all they're really interested in, and they wouldn't necessarily be aiming for an orgasm either. Uh-huh. You know, that to dress up as a pony and have somebody ride on your back is exciting in a deeply fulfilling way that is not specifically orgasm directed.
Catherine, what do you feel about the whole 50 Shades phenomenon, the third film's coming out next week, you know, and what that book and those films have done, you know, for awareness of you know, some deviant desires? Do you think that that's a good thing for that culture, a bad thing?
Have you seen the movies?
I have not seen the movies, and I read maybe several chapters of the first book and then just went, blah, and threw it away. you know, they were originally written as Twilight fan fiction.
Right.
And I love fan fiction. I mean, to me, the idea of taking your favorite characters from some pretty tame, vanilla popular culture and making them all do sexy stuff for you. I love the idea of that kind of thing. That seems very deviant and wonderful to me.
I do that with Star Trek, by the way.
The problem with, say, you know, 50 Shades of Grey is it's really just romance novels, you know? I mean, that's what they are. And the problem with them is that they don't educate anyone about things like consent and negotiation. You know, it's, you know, romance novels aren't people saying, you know, I would like to have you rip my bodice, please, or please don't rip my bodice. They just rip bodices. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right, they
so there's
sensationalize
no educational it. Value in a book like that where it doesn't talk about the most important things, like what is the difference between BDSM and abuse?
Well, I you know, think there's a big, thick line between that.
Twilight books were modeling an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to go back. Tony, I know you're on one thread, but I got to go back to the orgasm question, because as Vince knows, I have said on this radio station, Catherine, I see the face of God in an orgasm, because I'm an atheist by trade, by background, but when I have sex, there is the face of the Almighty in my face, not the orgasm. But anyway, you were talking about the idea that some of these people who are involved in some of these kinks, pony play, baked beans, etc., which we can all get behind, aren't actually in it for the orgasm. Now, let's just for a second separate the whole idea of sexuality. For me, the orgasm is obviously part of a larger sexual experience, but the sexual experience itself doesn't work without the orgasm for me. You're telling me the baked bean people and the pony play people, the orgasm isn't even part of the equation for them?
Well, it might not be. I mean, for some it might be. But, you know, there's a difference between sex and the erotic. I mean, the erotic is everything that goes sort of around what your bodies are doing. It's the stuff that goes on in your mind. And for somebody who, for example, is interested in being a pony boy, the act of transforming into an animal and play acting as an animal and having that sense of now I am not a human being anymore. I don't have to feel ashamed of being naked. I don't have to feel ashamed of being affectionate or, you know, silly or sexual. And I can just, for a day, run around naked in the woods with a saddle and a bridle and whinny and eat sugar cubes and carrot sticks. And that activity is a wonderful end in itself. And it may be directly erotic, and at the end of the day, they're going to go find a filly to play with, or they're at the end of the day going to masturbate or something. But that whole day-long experience is about so much more than just getting off.
And for our uninitiated listeners, masturbation is sex with someone you love.
Uh-huh.
That's an old joke, but I knew I'd get a laugh there. I knew I'd get a laugh. Thank you.
That was easy enough.
Well, I mean, Vince had a question for you,
oh,
but
I
no, it doesn't.
This
look
is the
like
problem when you have three people doing the show.
No,
this
look,
is the problem when you have three hosts.
I really want now. I did really want to go over
awkward
the
awkward silence.
No, I did want to go over the kink.
Pretty much my sex life.
Is that on the kink?
That's what she said. Anyway,
I like awkward silence.
I am on the. I'm looking at the kink map. And okay. As you know, and Johnny's going to put it up on our website later, but it is a bit confusing for the uninitiated. Tony, I'm going to show you the kink map.
I'm taking
so
my first
Catherine,
look.
So, Catherine, just give us...
It is a bit confusing for
talk
the
us through it a little bit, because there's a lot of kinks on there, and there's lines and charts. It looks like that chart of the CIA and the FBI trying to solve a crime.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Figure out who's in the mob.
It's kind of not maybe sane.
Well, what's going on in that? What are you trying to do? You're literally trying to map every kink.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I'm trying to do is that the map has these sort of oval shapes, which are darker with white writing on them, and those are what I call the core kinks. So these are the touchy-feely or smelly substances that form a kind of a basic core of a kink. So they would be like feet, leather, rubber, goo, fat, things like that. So the people have a very strong erotic and sexual reaction to those substances.
Bacon, right? Bacon, for example.
And then people elaborate those into a scenario. So, for example, you know, foot fetish probably even shouldn't be considered deviant or weird in any way. It's so incredibly common. We're probably wired as human beings to react to feet because of the hormones that come out of feet are the same hormones that come out of our armpits and our groin. So we're, you know, people think, ooh, it's weird you like feet, but so many people like feet, let's just get over it and understand that feet are sexual things.
I've been saying that for years.
Good. So, but a lot of people who are into feet aren't just interested in looking at the feet. Mm. They want the feet to do something. And so there's a whole world of people who are interested in watching feet pump the gas pedal of a car.
Yeah. Vince has been saying that for years, too.
I've seen that in the movies, yeah.
And you know, I'll see movies now, like even kids' movies, and some editor edit in a whole minute of a woman pressing on the gas pedal of a car, and I'm going, what are they doing there? But in any case...
That's the sweet spot.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, to see a woman be masterful with a car and sort of take over it and use her foot in a very, you know, pressing up and down on that pedal is a very sort of sexual
act. I'm getting a little aroused here. This is a family show here, Catherine. Yeah, I was getting a little excited.
Good thing we got the B-side.
So, you know, in the map, I try to sort of... There are the core kinks and how they can be elaborated with a theme. So, like, transformation is a major theme, and you'll see that I have say, if you are into plush as a material and you want to elaborate on that, you might like to put on a fursuit and transform into some kind of furry animal, a cartoonish furry animal. So that's the furry thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's muddy. I'm working on another version of the map, which is much more comprehensible.
Yeah, you got to have one of those
interactive.
One of those guys that does the subway map or something like that, put this thing together, because this looks like that.
Did you run that map in the Brooklyn paper?
It looks like one of those wacky subway maps from the 70s where everybody was high on drugs and into hallucinogens.
I got to tell you, though, Halsey Street, though, that's my erogenous zone, and so maybe you can get that on the map.
Is that a vector map?
But I got to ask you about the word kink. What is it? Because I'm a nuts and bolts guy. What's the etymology of that? Where does that word come from? What does it mean, and how far does it go back? Kink or kinky or however we...
That's interesting. I think of kink as being, instead of the straight and narrow, something that's a little bit more circuitous,
mm-hmm.
right? So, in other words, you're not necessarily going straight to penis and vagina activities. You're sort of taking a more circuitous route to those. That would be why I think the word kink is... relevant.
Like a kink in a hose or something like that?
Yeah, or kinky hair, you know, that's spirally and curly.
Hmm.
I want to get back just for a second. We've got to stop talking about the penis and vagina as if they're some sort of outmoded sexual organs. They are front and center in the vast majority of Americans and worldwide people's lives. Am I right?
Well,
not
maybe
according
that's
to the kink
true
map.
For most of the guys, you know.
Ah, interesting.
But I think that women, for example... I mean, romance novels are basically female pornography, right? And the whole point of the romance novel is to take a while to get to the screwing part.
Well, I didn't say it had to happen without foreplay or something. I'm in favor of foreplay.
Right, but in, for example, the romance novel, you have to have all this conflict and tension and misunderstanding and all this sort of, you know, stuff that messes with you on your way to the exciting part, the nuts and bolts.
It's like an episode of Three's Company.
Yeah.
They never finished the job on that show, by the way.
Misunderstandings and pratfalls and all that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
And that part is what makes the whole end part worthwhile.
I want to go on record also. I'm not doing like a heteronormative thing. I love gay sex. I love bi sex. I love all of the different sexes, Catherine, just so you know.
Uh-huh.
But I was just saying that the majority of people on Earth consider the penis and maybe another penis, an anus, a vagina. These are what we call... I don't know. What would you call it? Sexual normative, if you will, non-deviant. I mean, but that's what most people are focused on. Am I right?
I don't know.
Wow.
I'm not certain about that.
Okay.
I mean, I think that there are people who, if all they want to do is get off, that's the place they're going to, and that's what they're thinking about. But most people don't just want to get off. I mean, most people want to have some kind of a give and take, tension, excitement, seduction, you know.
Well, I mean, I'm including seduction. I'm including love. I'm including romantic love. I'm dinner, candlelight. I mean, the whole thing. But at the end
awkward
of the
silence.
Day, awkward silence. But at the end of the day, when you are seeking sexual gratification, aren't your sex organs a part of that? That's what I'm asking.
Sure. But for example, like, you know, if you're doing messy fun play, wet and messy play, where you're throwing pies at each other or drenching each other in baked beans or going and playing in a mud hole somewhere or something, yeah, after you've done doing all of that, that's kind of the foreplay. And if you're into it and if you want to afterwards, yes, you're going to have, you know, bumping uglies.
Nothing ugly
whatever
about mine.
Body part combination you wish to engage in and have lock up together, go for that later.
You know, birds have cloaca, just for the record.
Uh-huh.
I mean, talk about locking up. That's literally what they do.
Did you read the story in the Times today about the crawfish?
I did not get to that, Vince. I work at Newsweek.
I thought you didn't read the Times except for on Sunday.
No. I read the Times. No, I read the Times every day in print.
All right, off topic.
No, there's a crawfish. It's a new crawfish. It's only been around.
It's a new crawfish.
It's only been around for like 10 years.
There's no way that's true.
And it's blown up, and it is a female, and when it lays its eggs, they're already fertilized.
What?
And it clones itself.
What?
It's parthenogenesis.
This is killing us. We don't need men. Catherine, we don't need men at all.
But the interesting thing about the story was they say that this, that species have tried this in the past and they fail because ultimately sex is important in creating a stronger animal, one that is better able to protect itself against diseases and bacteria and viruses and stuff like that. So,
exactly.
You know, by having sex, we're making the world a better place.
If you're hearing Vince's voice, I think what he's advocating is more sex for a stronger humanity. Right?
I think that's what I heard.
Well, that's sexual reproduction, which seems to me to be totally, you know, not in the realm we're talking about here.
You got kids, Catherine? You got kids?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. Because, you know, I have kids, too. And it's
but
been
I mean,
a source
you know,
of controversy.
Reproduction was not the purpose of sex for me. I mean, it is only once or twice in my life the purpose of sex. Let's put it that way.
That's the reason why sex is so much fun. It's so the body knows to do it so it can ultimately reproduce.
Yeah, that's what Vince was really talking about.
I think that's where we're going with
it. I mean, that's what evolution's all about. You believe in evolution, Catherine, right?
Yeah.
Because that's not a theory as far as I'm concerned. As you know, I'm an atheist.
Uh-huh, me too.
Just throw that out there.
That's really nice.
Tony, so, you got a question?
No, I was just going to ask, you know, it's one thing for you know, when you were starting out, you said you found these niche magazines, and for like minds to talk to like minds, they probably really open up about it. But how easy or not easy was it for you to get, you know, people to describe their deviant desires as somebody, you know, as an outsider looking in? Do people really open up when you start probing them? I meant that seriously. Or do you know, did you have to pry to get them to really explain how deep their desires go?
I had no problem getting people to open up. I mean, it may be that it's pretty clear when you talk to me that I'm completely non-judgmental and I'm not squeamish in the least, and I'm deeply curious. You know, I think a lot of people would love to have a chance to talk more about sort of their innermost desires. And in the case of quite a lot of the people that I interviewed who were, say, heterosexual men with an unusual interest, they had not had a lot of opportunities in their lives to talk about their desires with a heterosexual woman who wasn't about to go running and screaming in the opposite direction.
So how would you suggest to interested listeners, you know, to start that conversation? How do you have a safe sex conversation, you know, that encompasses things that you maybe aren't necessarily comfortable about talking about?
You mean, say, you are someone with a niche interest and you want to bring this up with somebody who's already a boyfriend or girlfriend?
On a first date.
Yeah.
On a first date.
Yeah.
You want to bring that right
in. Or you want your friend who you don't know has a niche interest to know that you're open to hearing about it, but you don't necessarily know, you know, how to bring it up without seeming like you're trying to pry or something.
You got a shy friend, Tony? Is that what this is about?
I'm not asking for a friend nor myself. I'm asking
this
for
this is specifically
listeners.
For the listeners. Yes.
What about buying my book and handing it to them and saying, "What do you think of this?"
There you go.
That's good. That's always
that's exactly what the sex toy woman said to
it
us.
Makes,
a couple
it makes
weeks.
A great
buy
Christmas.
Buy my sex toys.
Makes a great Christmas present, right, Catherine?
Well, yeah, it certainly is a conversation starter.
Although
you know,
in some cases
some
an ender.
People like to have it on their coffee table to freak out their super square friends. Mm. And other people like to have it as just a way to say, open up that conversation about, you know, showing people that there's all this stuff going on and that these people aren't crazy. You know, I mean, that's the thing where, you know, if all you got the impression of like unusual sexuality was from watching, you know, movies and stuff, mm-hmm. you would think that basically anybody who's sexually odd is probably a serial killer.
Mm.
You know, because the only time you ever see, you know, a foot fetishist or something like that on CSI or something is because they're a killer.
Right.
That's what Mike Pence thinks, yeah. right?
Let's leave Mike Pence out of this. We're talking about arousal, okay? We're talking about arousal, Vince. No, this might be my last question because I know Vince has got he's got like a freaking diary over there of questions.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But we're non-judgmental here. This is a safe space as far as I'm concerned. But what is quote unquote the weirdest thing you've ever seen?
The weirdest thing.
I mean, well, and again, non-judgmental.
Yeah. No. I mean, my idea of what's weird might be different from your idea of what's weird.
Okay.
I mean, you know.
All right, well, what's your idea of weird?
Well, when the first book came out, people were like, well, why didn't you write about necrophilia? Because the minute they think about weird sex, they're going to think about the darkest, non-consensual something that they can think of, you know? And I worry about people like that, you know, people who the first thing they think of when they think about weird sex is going to be stuff like pedophilia and necrophilia and zoophilia or whatever.
That's like Mike Pence.
Yeah.
That's
I'm not going there because that's just non-consenting partners, you know? There's no way to do any of that legitimately.
Yeah, that's criminal for a reason, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when I think about weird, I think about something that I couldn't possibly figure out how that could be exciting.
Well, give us an example.
Well, let's see. I mean, I heard about somebody who was really turned on by toy boats.
Mm-hmm.
So
toy
this
boats,
was a self-identified lesbian who said that her primary sex toy and her sexual fantasies all revolve around toy boats.
So for her, it was a sexual fantasy. The boat was some sort of object. Did she use it as a masturbatory aid or just seeing
yes,
the boat?
But also in her fantasies, the toy boat is like in her fantasies, the toy boat was kind of like a partner.
Right, but if she's rubbing the toy boat on her body, that's not even that weird. That's like just rubbing something on you. I'm talking about like when you said baked beans earlier. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not going to say I was aroused, but my curiosity was certainly engaged.
It was piqued.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm talking about. Like, is there some part of the kink map that you would say to me, oh, yeah, look at that bottom right corner. That is crazy ass shit. Non-judgmental, of course.
Well, the only thing that I think is crazy ass shit is anything that involves non-consenting partners.
Mm. Okay. Mm. But again, I'm not judging. So
I mean, people can have fantasies. Yeah. You know, about non-consenting partners or fantasies about being a non-consenting partner. You know, if like you have a rape fantasy, a fantasy of being raped. But it's a fantasy, and therefore you're in control of it because it's your fantasy. Mm-hmm. So it's really not non-consenting, and it's not rape because it's a fantasy. Now, mm-hmm. if you start mm-hmm. acting it out with another human being, then you're getting into the realm where you must negotiate before, during, and after, and all that sort of stuff, you know, because that's what sane adult human beings do.
Wow, it's hard. You got to talk about these things, you know. You really I mean, I'm a guy. To. Vince is a guy. Tony, you're somewhere in between. No, but I don't know how you talk. Tony, you talk to a partner. You're going to like say in advance, "Here's what I want to do. Here's what you want to do. Let's negotiate that." Like, you ever do that? Vince is married. He's boring.
You know. I've never done that with someone who I haven't been in a long-term relationship
with.
That's
what I'm talking about. So how do you do it? Tony said earlier before, like, well, do you bring it up on a first date, second date?
No, you said that, Kirsch. No,
you said we're alluding to that.
You said lay it out there.
Like, well, we know how to do it. It just requires buying the book.
That's what it is, yeah.
Was what I
and you know, you can get at Powerhouse Books.
And also, Catherine's going to be at Powerhouse Books on Monday, February 12th. We didn't say that. Monday, February 12th, 7 p.m., Catherine, we are going to have three guys in the front row, and we're going to be like, we're the ones who are going to be like,
licking our chops.
No, I don't know if we're licking our chops. We're going to be like, ooh, that's weird. Okay, non-judgmental. Ooh, it's cool. Yeah, we don't know what. We don't know how to take this.
Well, it'll be a really fun night. There's going to be a slideshow, and then Lizzie Sandell is going to be moderating and interviewing me, and people can ask questions. So if anyone's not satisfied with the questions you're asking me, and they have questions of their own, they can certainly come and ask me.
I don't know why I never get called to do those kind of moderating things.
I always want to moderate.
Yeah.
I'm a moderator. I'm very moderate.
All right. Yeah.
So stuffed animals, yes. Real animals, no?
That's correct.
Yep. I just want to be clear on that, all right? We're not talking about real live animals here.
That is correct.
The only animals we're dealing with are human beings.
I have interviewed people who are convinced that their real live animals are consenting and all this sort of stuff, and I'm not buying it at all.
Mm. No, they're not consenting.
No.
No.
Mm, interesting. I mean, but you know bestiality. I hate to say it. I read the Kinsey report when I was a kid, and there's a number of people who are into that.
Well, I think the Kinsey report was at a time when a lot of people still lived on farms. I don't think a lot of people have ready access to cows and horses anymore.
Well, they're still out there.
Yes, I think it's probably more common than people would like to believe, but it's not okay.
It's not okay,
not okay.
Because the animal is not consenting.
That's correct.
And an apple pie doesn't have to consent, right?
Apple pie doesn't care what you're doing with it.
There you go.
I want that on my tombstone. Here lies Gersh Kuntzman. The apple pie didn't care what he did to it. All right, we got to wind this down. Any last thoughts, Vince?
I think we've just about covered it all. We've literally covered
Tony,
it all.
Tony, come on. You got one last thought. Tony, what are you into? Seriously, what are you into? Vanilla? Am I right?
Yeah, I'm pretty vanilla, minus the BO, I'd like to think.
Yeah, well...
One time, Gersh was... we've stayed in hotel rooms together, and he was sleeping, and I heard him talking about, Diane Sawyer.
Oh, yeah. Diane Sawyer is barely even a fetish.
That goes without question. But the weird one was when he was acting like a lobster and demanding he be thrown in the pot.
Yeah. Oh.
You're asleep,
that's
Tony.
That's pain is pleasure.
That's right.
That's maybe. Pretty scary to me.
All right, we got to wind it down. Catherine Gates, it has been an absolute pleasure and not a pain... Not a pain at all to have you on the radio.
Not at all.
Just as a reminder, Catherine, of course, is the author of Deviant Desires, Incredibly Strange Sex, which came out about 20 years ago, but is going to be reissued by Powerhouse Books. And she's going to be at Powerhouse Books Monday, February 12th, 7 to 9 p.m. Catherine Gates, thank you for joining us on Brooklyn Paper Radio.
Thank you.
Call anytime.
All right,
thanks,
we'll see you
Catherine.
There.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. 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 Wow.
We're good. She was good.
She's a total pro.
Yeah. She really knows what she's talking about. I mean, but you've been studying. She's been studying this stuff for years and years and years.
I mean, I've been doing it for years and years and years.
And you don't know half as much.
No. I don't know. How much? What percentage is like a hundredth? I knew the baked bean thing. You knew about the baked bean thing?
Oh, baked beans.
I didn't like baked beans before.
I can't look at
refried.
I can't look at baked beans the same way.
They call it pork and beans for a reason.
We're going to go to the supermarket after this, Vince, and I'm going to be walking in the baked bean shelves, and all of a sudden I'm just like, oh my God, something's happening. I'm feeling something. It's like, I don't even know where it's coming from. All right, it's your show.
It is my show.
I want to say it's been a pleasure. This is like the last waltz. And I'm I'm like Neil Young saying, you know what? It's not my show, but I have to say it's been a pleasure being on stage with these people, the finest people in the world.
I love it when Gersh walks by me and goes, "Top that," and I say, "Why? By taking a dump on the stage?"
I don't know what that's a reference to.
You don't know what that's a reference to?
No,
it's the last waltz.
Nobody took a dump on the stage in the last waltz.
You don't know the Neil Diamond story in the last waltz?
I mean, I know that when Neil Diamond comes on in the last waltz, everybody goes to the bathroom.
No, Neil Diamond comes on in the last waltz, and he does his song.
Dry Your Eyes.
Dry Your Eyes. Yeah.
Take your song out. Right. It's a new ball.
So the story is he walks off stage, and he walks right by Bob Dylan.
Okay. Mm.
And he says something like, top that, you know, or something like that. And Bob Dylan says, wait, I'm going to take a shit on the stage?
Is that really true?
That's a true story. Look
it
up. Google it.
As long as the stage consents.
Johnny, you're going to Google that for our listeners.
Is that right?
No, I got to say...
It has to be a consenting stage. If we learned anything.
Yeah.
I mean, Neil Diamond is a bit of a pop culture joke, but the performance of the song was great in the last waltz. And I don't think... Dylan's a jerk, but would he have said that to Neil Diamond?
It's a story that I've heard and that I read about.
It's just funny that Neil Diamond would say, "Top that, Bob." It's like Dylan,
hey,
you know.
Hey. I don't see that happening.
All right. Anyway, Tony.
But he's Brooklyn born, so we love him.
What I was trying to say, Tony, it has been a pleasure being on the show with you.
Well,
you're a total professional. You ask good questions. You listen to the answers, and it's just you always have an insight. Vince, you're a handsome man. I've enjoyed being on the show with you in the past. Maybe I'm coming out of retirement. I don't know.
It's nice to have you here, Gersh. But you know what happens? I fall back into my old ways, which is I just sit here and I let Gersh do the talking.
You're good at talking.
And well, I have an interest in deviant desires. I mean, come on. You don't call me on to talk about a development project in Brooklyn Heights.
No, I'm not. No, there's no reason to.
Ice cream. Yeah. We should ask her about ice cream.
Oh, man.
You might have never gone to that Ample Hills. You heard what people do with ice cream.
Talk about Ample Hills. Hey-o. All right, so sign us off. Come on, Vince. Come on.
Listen, I want to thank Gersh Kuntzman for coming on the show today.
That's right.
Helping us out with our guest, Catherine Gates, whose book is called, what's it called, Gersh?
Deviant Desires, Incredibly Strange Sex.
Reissued by our good friends at Powerhouse down in Dumbo. I want to thank Tony Rotunno for being here once again.
Thank you very much for having me.
He's the voice of reason on the show. And I want to thank Johnny here for not mentioning Pody Boy Curtis from The Outsiders
That's right.
When
thank
it was
you.
Brought up.
I was wondering what that was.
I did that, and I kept them off.
Pony Boy.
There you go. So thank you, Johnny or Jimmy or whatever your name is.
Johnny Kuhn, how you doing?
And we'll see you next week on Brooklyn Paper Radio.